You're listening to the Bliss Runner Podcast, episode number 14. This podcast is for any woman who has ever had a challenge in her sex life. Whether you've lost interest in sex in your long-term relationship, orgasms have become elusive, or you've just been longing for something more, something deeper that you can't quite even articulate, this podcast is here to help. In this show, we'll explore how you can transform your experience of sex by learning the subtle art of awakening your sexual energy. Now, this is not just woo-woo stuff. It's tangible, and it's having a profound effect on women's lives. We'll hear stories by women like you and me who've moved from lack of sexual enjoyment to incredible, expanded, ecstatic states by accessing this energy inside. We'll also talk to authors, teachers, and practitioners in the field for guidance on how you can get started on this deeply gratifying journey. I can tell you that it has completely changed my life, and I know it can enrich yours. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm excited at long last to be starting my second season of the Bliss Runner podcast. I'd hoped to start up again before now, but oh boy, I'm telling you, the stars just didn't seem to align. Every time I tried to coordinate an interview with someone, there would be a storm or some other challenging scheduling snafu that kept things from going smoothly. So I decided to just go ahead and kick off the season with a solo cast on a very important topic. I'll tell you, I chose this topic because the number one article on my website by far, like by two or three times as many hits, is the one entitled How to Reawaken Your Vaginal Sensitivity. So this tells me that vaginal numbness or pain or just general lack of pleasure in the vagina is an epidemic. And so many of us experience this, and we probably all feel like it's just us, like we're alone in this. So today I'm going to talk about some of the many issues that contribute to this situation, and hopefully we can shed a little bit of light on why it is that so many of us struggle with these challenges. Before I dive in, however, I just want to give you a better idea of what to expect from this season. The first thing is that I am going to publish every other week instead of every week for this season, and that's in part because I'm going to simultaneously begin working on a book. I say that sheepishly because it's kind of terrifying to say the words that I want to write a book, but I do. I want to write a book. So I need to juggle my time between both projects. Like all of you out there, I am neck deep in responsibilities. I have a job and two kids and a house to take care of and all kinds of other normal life stuff that keeps me from being able to devote all my time to this project, which is my passion mission project. I love talking about this and trying to help other women learn to expand into their ecstatic energy potential, but it's not something I can do full time quite yet. So that means that I need to juggle things, and I'm going to be doing that between the podcast, the blog, and now beginning to work on this book. So I hope you'll have a little patience with me as I do the best that I can. Okay, all of that being said, let's get into this topic. Today, I'm going to talk about some of the many issues that contribute to this situation, and hopefully we can shed a little bit of light on why it is that so many of us struggle with these challenges. The first thing that I want to talk about that many of us deal with in one way or another is shame. Many of us carry around the belief, whether consciously or subconsciously, that there is something about our vaginas that we need to be ashamed of. It might be something pertaining to the appearance of the vagina, or the aroma of the vagina, or just the fact of having one, there's so many things in our modern culture that might have contributed to these negative beliefs that it's even difficult to parse exactly where your negative beliefs might have come from. I can tell you from my own experience that I have a few things that I've been able to identify as sources for my own negative programming. One of them is a distinct memory that I have from when I was very, very young. I don't know exactly how old, but I was young enough that my mother was, I want to say changing my diaper, but I'm not sure that I actually had a diaper. I think it was more that she might have been addressing either a rash or something like that that I might have gotten at a young enough age where she would be taking care of it, but I was old enough, obviously, to form and hold the memory of this happening. But I remember lying back on the bed and I had my legs open and she was looking at my vagina and she had an expression of disgust on her face. You know, just like that ew face that we make when we see something gross. I mean, many of us as parents, I can remember vividly myself making that expression when changing diapers. I mean, it's not a pleasant thing to do, but as a young child, when you see that expression on someone's face, as they're looking at your genitalia, you might, as I believe I did, interpret it the wrong way. I don't think that she actually thought there was something gross and disgusting about my vagina. I just think she was expressing a facial concern over whatever the condition was that she was encountering there, whether it was a rash or a mess of some kind. I don't know. But in any event, I interpreted it to mean that there was something gross about my vagina. That affected my ability to relax when allowing a sexual partner in the future to get up close and personal with my vagina. In other words, if they were looking at my vagina or, close enough to be able to smell what was going on down there, for many years, it would be a source of tension for me. Even though I learned to relax enough to allow it to happen and to enjoy it to a certain degree, there was always this underlying fear or belief that my partner was just silently putting up with a level of disgust that they probably felt about being that close to my vagina. This unspoken belief was definitely at play in my sex life for about 30 years. And it was only just recently that I guess, quote unquote, healed this shame. And it was really by a partner, my current partner, giving me the gift of expressing to me how beautiful he felt my vagina was. I'll never forget the first time he said something to that effect, and I could tell it was genuine, not only from the way he said it, but from the expression on his face and from the way he reinforced this feeling again and again over the course of the first couple of months of our relationship. And I have to tell you that it messed with me in a beautiful way because it completely upended this long-standing fear and feeling that I'd had that there was really just something disgusting and wrong about my vagina. Suddenly, through his eyes, I was able to see the beauty. And he was able to very specifically articulate what he found beautiful about my vagina and allow me to then see it as well. I don't know if this might sound silly to some of you, but it really, I have to say, it was a profound piece of my own healing process. If you find by searching your subconscious that you carry some kind of shame in this area, I hope you will take the time to try and undo this shame because it's well worth it. There are clues that might be an indication that you have this kind of shame at play. For example, if you find yourself not wanting someone to perform oral sex on you, it might be because of this sense of shame of your own physiology. It could be other reasons, of course, behind that as well, but that would be one clue. Or if you're just tense, maybe you do allow them to do it, but you find that you can't fully enjoy it, or that you stop them prematurely, or something along those lines. Those can all be indicators that you're carrying this kind of shame. Like I said, I consider myself so lucky to have found a partner who could teach me the true beauty of my own physiology. But if you don't have a partner, or if your partner is unable, for whatever reason, to reflect to you the beauty of your own vagina, then there are ways that you can do this for yourself. And one of the wonderful ways that we can do this these days is through art. There are many artists nowadays on the internet who are depicting the beauty of the female genitalia through various art forms, whether it's photographs showing many different vulva so that you can see not only the different shapes and sizes, but the different colors and the different configurations of hair and everything. Or there are also some that are like plaster casts of the vagina that show all of the variation and uniqueness out there in the world. It's really something beautiful to behold when you see how very different we are and how many different ways our vaginas express themselves. They're really like fingerprints or like faces. They're completely unique and beautiful. And I think that one of the effects that seeing this kind of art has on me is to start to see the beauty just in the diversity. When you can see how multifaceted our universe is in how it expresses itself, and specifically through the expression of our genitalia, it's really wonderful. And I think it helps one to appreciate your own uniqueness when you can see this form of art. One of the websites that I came upon that has work along these lines that you might want to check out, and I will put the link in the show notes as well, but go to www.greatwallofvagina.co.uk. And its headline is Changing Female Body Image Through Art. Check it out, because I really, I think that's one of the great ways that we can begin to change our programming right now, whether or not we have the help of a wonderful partner. The next thing I want to talk about really is even just the words that we use to talk about our vagina. And let me just say that I admit up front here that I'm using the word vagina incorrectly, in that I'm using it to refer to both the internal canal, which is technically the vagina, as well as the exterior portions of our genitalia, the labia majora, labia minora, the clitoris, everything. I'm just kind of lumping it all together as one structure for the sake of ease today and calling it the vagina. There are many words that have been used over the course of time to refer to the female genitalia, and each of us has to decide for ourselves how we want to refer to our genitalia. As you can tell, I use the word vagina. It's mostly because that's just the medical term for it, and so I've used that term more often than any other, especially in these communications with you, because I hadn't come up with a different term that I preferred. And honestly, I'm not sure why the word vagina has such a bad rap. There's a lot of people who don't like to use it. They think that, I don't know, they even think the word is ugly, but It's not clear to me whether it's the word itself that people find unappealing or whether it's the association between this negative programming that I've described and the word, and whether that just makes the word seem unsavory. Others have chosen to refer to the vagina in many different ways. One of the sort of Eastern New Age terms that's often used is the yoni. That just doesn't quite fit for me. I don't choose to use that term, although I know a lot of people find it more beautiful and comfortable than vagina. It's just that for me personally, when I try and use that word, I feel like I'm trying to be someone I'm not. So I haven't been able to make it a part of my vocabulary. Then there's the word pussy. There's been a lot of coverage involving this word in the press in the last year, thanks to our president. But I have to say, even before all of that happened, I never really was very comfortable with it. But not everyone feels that way. There's one organization called Orgasmic Meditation that regularly uses pussy in its videos and training materials. I think what they're trying to do is positive. They're trying to, I think, reclaim that word as a word to indicate beauty and power and all of the positivity of the female genitalia. But for me, I can't quite get over my negative associations with the word, and so it doesn't really work. You know, pussy in my own past was a word that was often used by men to denote something that they were going to take or get from us. You know, the expressions like, I'm going to go get some pussy, or, you know, it seemed to be used to reduce us to the mere function that we can perform for a man and to objectify us. And this has been demonstrated most recently by our very own president in the hot mic audio that was leaked last year before the election, where he used the word to brag about what he could do with women, how he could do anything he wanted, including grabbing them by the pussy. So I have a hard time using that word because of all of those associations. But that's just me and the associations that I have surrounding that word. Really, you need to find the words or word that makes you feel comfortable when you're talking about it. I think the key is to start talking about your genitalia and use whatever words you can to talk about it. So it might just be vagina, or it might be just a secret name that you come up with. I actually do have another word that I use to refer to my vagina privately with my partner. It's not like it's not like Sally Ann or some other like cutesy little name, but it's just another way of expressing it. And I'm not actually going to talk about that right now. I just want to keep it sort of between us. But you can find your own expression, and it should fit with the respect and honor that hopefully you will have found and can express when it comes to your vagina. The next thing that I want to briefly touch on that has a huge impact on how we experience pleasure, or if we experience pleasure in our vaginas, is the topic of health. Now, again, this topic is vast and also could warrant not only perhaps one entire episode, but many, because there are so many health issues that can impact our sexuality. But right now, I'll just to discuss a couple of issues that I've experienced and that I know many women do experience. One of them is recurring vaginal yeast infections. They're annoying. They are nagging. They are, hard to get rid of, ultimately. You may have some success in using some of the over-the-counter medications to deal with any particular outbreak of infection, but it's so common that these infections come back. And in fact, many women report that they get a yeast infection virtually every time they have sex, which that's just such a downer. I mean, it's so It dampens the appetite, one might say, at the very least. And not only that, but the infection itself during sex has an impact on whether you get sore. It makes your tissues far more sensitive and prone to irritation than they are when they're healthy and vital. So I'll just tell you that I battled these for years, for decades, and it was something that I just thought I was stuck with. And then I finally switched my approach and decided to visit a naturopathic doctor. And she actually taught me that what was going on was more systemic than I realized and suggested multiple different ways to try and help bring my natural pH level into balance. And we worked through those various ways, including dietary approaches and herbs and tinctures and, you know, various things like this, as well as treating each individual infection with a more natural substance that you can get over the counter, that's not just one of these harsh chemicals that you usually, that we usually use. But when I used these approaches in combination, I was able to achieve balance. So I very, very rarely get a yeast infection anymore. And I'm, as I've expressed, far more sexually active than I ever used to be. So it's, you know, it's really kind of a miracle in my life that I feel like I've gotten a handle on this, because it was just par for the course. It was just one of those things that sex and yeast infections went hand in hand, and it shouldn't be that way. So if you haven't already found someone to help you try and deal with this in a natural way that that looks at the whole person and looks at the systems and tries to approach this from the inside out rather than just dealing with one particular infection at a time, then I think you'll have more success. So give that a shot. Now, in the other area related to health that I wanted to briefly talk about is the prevention of pregnancy, contraception, because that is a health issue, of course, for us, as well as a major life issue. And it's something that profoundly affects how we experience pleasure or whether we allow ourselves to. Gosh, where to even begin on this one? I mean, how many of us live in mortal fear of becoming pregnant before we're ready? And yet we want to be sexually active. We want to have a positive experience. Now, whether you're married or not, you know, we want to have control over when we become a parent. And so that requires that we, or at least many of us do, I acknowledge that there are those who have different feelings about this, but I'm just offering my own viewpoint here. But to be a sexually active female, you have to be cognizant of pregnancy, and that, oh boy, it can be such a huge source of fear and anxiety, not only about the what if it doesn't work, but also the anxiety surrounding the individual contraceptive methods that we have available to us, because many of them involve, you know, affecting our hormones, and that can have multiple side effects and multiple long-term health effects for us. So, you know, it can make many of us feel rather anxious about what we're doing to our bodies. But, and it can also trigger a lot of fear. It can trigger a lot of anger and resentment about how we deal with this. I know I dealt with this a lot, the anger at feeling as if the burden was entirely on my shoulders. Maybe things are a little bit better now. I don't know, but I know I really struggled with the fact that there were so few contraceptive methods available to men, that usually men don't want to wear condoms. You know, obviously beyond the casual sex situations where it's advised for a multitude of reasons, but when you're in a committed relationship, you know, using a condom is usually something that neither party really wants to do, but there's so few options for the man, or I don't even know if there are any options for the man beyond a condom at this point. So that's frustrating for us. And that fear can translate into physical trepidation, into shutting down. By contrast, I can tell you that now that I'm on the other side of having my children and I'm very close to being menopausal, I don't have to worry about pregnancy anymore. I was also lucky that I had a partner who chose to have a vasectomy, so I really didn't have to worry about pregnancy anymore. And that's huge. So the contrast in the in my experience of sexuality when I had to worry about pregnancy versus now that I don't is a stark difference. So these are just two of the multitude of health issues that can impact our sexuality. Obviously, I don't have the time to deal with all of them, but there are some really big ones that we haven't touched on, such as pregnancy and childbirth and menopause itself and many others, illnesses such as cancer. So, you know, it's fraught with challenge. It's a miracle that any of us ever enjoy sex, honestly, with all of the various curveballs that can be thrown our way. But it was important just to at least discuss some of the ones that seem to crop up on a daily basis. So that's why I talked about these two issues. The next thing I want to talk about that is definitely an issue we have to deal with when we are trying to find our way to experiencing pleasure in our vaginas is pain, of course. It's the antithesis of pleasure, but it's something that most of us have to deal with in one form or another. So it may be that you've had to deal with the kind of gynecological pain that comes with menstruation or endometriosis or ovarian cysts or any other kind of gynecological issue that may create internal pain. But in addition to that, many of us experience pain in our vagina, especially around the opening of our vagina during intercourse. I'll share with you that at one time I experienced pain due to an abrasion that I developed from intercourse. It was due to too much friction, and the abrasion appeared just to the outside of the opening of my vagina in the really soft tissues of the inner labia. And it was really excruciating, and it wouldn't heal. The tissue is similar there to like the inside of your mouth, and this abrasion would just reopen every single time that I had sex for, maybe it was even a whole year. It was a long time, and I just didn't know how to deal with it. Ultimately, you know, giving it a lot of time to heal was what solved the problem. But it took me a long time to get there. So if you're experiencing pain, obviously this is going to make it very difficult for you to overcome the barriers that this creates for you to experiencing pleasure. And I'm not just talking about the obvious, you know, that if it hurts, then obviously it doesn't feel good. But I'm also talking about the emotional and psychological effects that having painful intercourse has on you. And it creates its own set of mental barriers that may make it difficult for you to experience pleasure. This is a huge topic, and it's one that we're going to barely scratch the surface of. But after having interviewed a number of guests who experienced painful intercourse for one reason or another, I can tell you that it's a highly individualized situation. And you'll need to determine for yourself exactly what the source is of your pain and then find a practitioner to help you through the process of working through that pain. So, for example, Jamise Lachelle talked about her the pain that she had been experiencing as a result of a violent trauma, a violent assault that she had experienced when she was in the military. And she was able to find a professional who was highly trained in the area of dealing with the post-traumatic stress disorder and all of the fallout that comes from suffering from that kind of an attack. And she was able to get past it so that she now experiences pleasure. Another guest who talked about overcoming the pain that came with intercourse was Helena Nista, and I encourage you to listen to her episode and let her explain how she was able to overcome her painful sex. So if you are feeling pain during penetration, then something needs to be addressed. It may be necessary to stop having intercourse for a while until you can find out what's going on. It may just be that you need to make some adjustments in the amount and kind of foreplay that you're engaging in order to make sure that your body is fully relaxed and open and ready to receive. Or it may be that you have a deeper underlying issue that needs to be addressed. If so, just take the time to address that for yourself. Let me just add here that based on everything that I've learned over the last couple of years, I really do believe that most of us allow ourselves to be penetrated long before we're actually physically ready to be penetrated. And I think it's just that we haven't learned what it feels like to be truly ready. It's a qualitatively very different experience. The next issue I want to talk about is numbness. Maybe you don't feel pain. Maybe, in fact, you feel nothing. Very often, this kind of goes hand in hand with pain. In other words, you may alternate between feeling pain during intercourse or feeling nothing. And if that's the case, I just want you to know that it's possible to overcome this situation. This was definitely me. I was absolutely numb at my best when it came to intercourse for most of my sexually active life until just recently. So I just want you to have hope that you can overcome it. I believe that the main culprits for numbness are past sexual abuse of some kind, too much friction routinely, and also, like I said, allowing ourselves to be penetrated before we're truly ready. So how do we deal with these issues? Well, when it comes to past trauma, the best thing is to find a very qualified professional who can help you work through the emotional and psychological effects that the event has had on your life that then translate into the physical experience that you've been having. And if you can work through these things, then at least there's the possibility of creating a different experience. When it comes to friction, boy, that's a biggie and probably worth an entire episode unto itself, because it really does require relearning how we approach sex, from foreplay to how we engage in intercourse. There's just no need for that much friction. And all it does is damage tissues in the woman. And actually, it also serves to numb or reduce the sensitivity in men, which they don't realize. But it is possible, on the bright side, to both resensitize the woman and the man so that less friction is required in order to enjoy yourself. And then when it comes to penetration and readiness, we just need, as women, to both Learn when we are ready, which means tuning into the erectile tissues within and surrounding our vaginas so that we know basically when we have an internal hard-on. When we have an internal hard-on, we're ready. Before that, we're not. And most of us never even learned about this erectile tissue, so how could we possibly be tuned into it? Well, we can start to learn about that and we can pay attention. And we will learn as we become familiar with this, what it feels like to have this internal hard-on, then we can pay attention to what kind of foreplay helps us get there. And we also need to find our voice so that we can put the brakes on and let our partners know, I'm not quite ready yet. And tuning into energy, which of course is at the heart of everything I talk about, both in my blog and on this podcast, because energy is where the pleasure comes from. So we need to support our physiology with the vast potential of our energetic pleasure. So the more you can focus on the energy and try and get that working in support of your physical experience of sex, the greater chances you have for not only overcoming numbness, but for experiencing intense pleasure. Speaking of which, what about pleasure? Is it possible to feel pleasure in our vaginas? Is it possible to have vaginal orgasms? And I'm here to tell you emphatically that it is. As many of you may already know from reading my articles and from previous podcasts, I did not experience vaginal orgasms at all until very recently. When I start to talk about the possibility for learning to have vaginal orgasms, I sense that there may be a little bit of pushback. And here's what I'm sensing. Some of the literature that I read about female pleasure seems to be focused on claiming our pleasure by declaring the primacy of the clitoris. And I think that the reason for this is a bit of a backlash against the material that was put forth by Freud and other psychoanalysts from that era who said that clitoral orgasms were quote-unquote immature orgasms and that the only truly mature female pleasure would come from vaginal orgasms. And I think that after that, because so few women were experiencing vaginal orgasms, and in order to give clitoral orgasms a little more legitimacy, some felt the need to say that, well, wait a minute, maybe actually, in fact, maybe all orgasms arise from the clitoris, and that, in fact, there's no such thing as a quote-unquote vaginal orgasm. Now, I actually sort of, I agree with this in some respects, but I also disagree with this. So I agree with it in the sense that you cannot really separate the clitoris from the vagina. They are all one, it's all one interconnected system. So the vestibular bulbs, which surround the vaginal opening deeply embedded within the walls of the vagina, are a part of the clitoral structure, but they are also a part of the vaginal experience. The way that I disagree with this whole idea that there's no such thing as a vaginal orgasm is that I've experienced them, and I've experienced them without stimulation of the external structures of the clitoris. And I think that when they are discussing clitoral versus vaginal orgasms, the kind of orgasm that they say come from clitoral stimulation, they are talking about the external structure. So they usually say things like, it's the pelvic bone of the partner pressing against the pelvic bone of the woman who that ends up causing the orgasm, the so-called vaginal orgasm. Well, that doesn't explain why you would have a vaginal orgasm when you're not in the missionary position, right? Which is something that I can tell you that I've experienced and others have. So it just doesn't hold water. But like I said, I don't really see a need to pit one against the other because it's just all part of the same interconnected structure. And then beyond that, the energetic connection really is everything works together. The womb, the cervix, the vagina, the clitoris, when they are all vibrating together, then that's where the magical levels of pleasure can happen. I am not saying that you should attempt to learn to have vaginal orgasms so that that will then be the only thing that you seek. But by the same token, I feel that if you focus entirely on peak clitoral orgasms, the kind that come from direct stimulation of the external head of the clitoris, that you're doing yourself a disservice because you are limiting yourself to a very narrow band of pleasure. That being said, I can tell you that training myself to have a vaginal orgasm independent from external clitoral stimulation was one of the key components of unlocking the orgasmic ecstatic energy that then began to flow and express itself in so many amazing ways in my sex life and in my life in general. So I think there is a great value to learning to have vaginal orgasms, not just for the sake of enjoying penetrative sex more, which of course is one of the main things that you will experience, but also because it can unlock this entire other realm of ecstatic experiences that may not otherwise have been available to you. So we're coming to the end of what I wanted to talk about for today, and I just wanted to do a real quick summary of what it is that we've covered here today. We talked a little bit about shame and about learning to overcome the feelings of shame that we might have about our vagina, about how it looks and how it smells, and how we can learn to appreciate the natural beauty and the diversity of the uniqueness of our vagina. We talked a little bit about health and how health can affect our experience of pleasure. We talked about fear, the fear of pregnancy. We talked about pain and ways that we can try and help alleviate the pain. We talked about numbness. And then we talked a little bit about what's possible, about the pleasure that's possible if we can work intimately with all of these various issues that might be preventing us from experiencing pleasure. So we'll go into greater detail about all of these topics, I hope, in the future, and hopefully I'll be able to find some experts who I can bring on the show to maybe go even deeper into some of these topics one by one. And now is when I want to encourage you to head on over to my website if you haven't already at www.blissrunner.com. You can find many articles there talking about these subjects and others, and you can also find some useful tools that I've created, a free ecstatic energy meditation that you can download, and I also have some other recordings that are meditations and practices that I created to try and help women resensitize their vagina. So check those out. And if you have any questions, you can email me at Susanna@blissrunner.com. Next week, or I should say in 2 weeks, I will be back with another episode. And until then, I remain blissfully yours.